Order of the East Bay Charter Township Board of Trustees, if you'll all join me with starting with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, welcome everybody, and thank you for joining us tonight. We'll start with roll call attendance, Ann.
Walters.
Present.
Forte.
Here.
Lyle.
Here.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Merrill.
Here.
Edgell is not here.
You're joining the ranks.
Okay. Did you get everyone there? I'm here, too. You got it?
Oh
yeah? Okay. And let's see. Presentation of the agenda. So on the agenda, we did have some updates after the original one came out with an updated agenda. So in your packet, you'll have correspondence and reports, the consent agenda, which includes the December meeting for board minutes. The updated agenda had a 2020 budget amendment, just dash one for that. And then we included a road naming. I believe it was Memory Lane, if yep. memory serves me.
Yeah.
Sorry, had to go there. And then business before the boards. This is tends to be more of a... we try to make it more of a report meeting, not that we won't be making some decisions, but we have Gordy LaPointe here for the Grand Traverse Board of Commissioners update. We have assessing here to provide us an update on assessing activities, and then Manor please help me with that. Kosterison, thank you. Boy, that one always trips me up. To go over some financial information, Brian Souza here from Wade Trim. And John DeVozo is here to talk with us about some of the activities that we're undertaking with the BPW and decisions that we need to take a look at with respect to the utility financial solutions and the 2020 rates, and then scheduling our joint meetings with the Planning Commission and the Parks Commission. So is there anything that anyone needs to add or thinks we should remove from the agenda, or are we fine to move forward with from the board?
Good.
Okay. Well, we will move forward. And does anyone have a conflict with anything? Hearing no conflict presented, this is the first opportunity for public comment, and we welcome anyone to come up to the podium, introduce themselves, and speak to the board. You know, I didn't, Mark, I'm just going to pick on you because I didn't have you on the agenda, but you're welcome.
Sure.
Yeah.
Barely here. As I was telling the commissioner, the only reason I'm here is my team downstate decided not to have an in-person meeting today and do it by phone. Mm-hmm. So here I am. So, yeah, as you know, I travel a lot. So, Mark McKellar, Grand Traverse County Road Commission. Just want to briefly touch on a couple of things, a few things, actually. As you're all aware, the East-West Corridor study completed. And we have been for several months now, since about May, hashing through all the different alternatives that were provided, including the 10 roundabouts on South Airport Road, which we're not going to do, okay? So, and we actually paid for them to tell us that. That's what concerns me about this group, okay? Even we all know, and we're not this. We're not engineers. Sorry, Brian, but we're not engineers. We know that ain't going to work. So, but... We do Hammond Road is something, and then Lafreniere out to Keystone are areas of a lot of traffic we're going to address right away, and we are going to do some roundabouts, and the first one scheduled will be at the corner of 4 Mile and Hammond Road, and as I talked to Beth earlier today, or this evening. There are going to be opportunities for, like, public hearings and discussion for the public as to what it is, how it's going to impact people, why we're doing it. And it's really to create a smoother flow of in that corridor. The other is Hammond Road is going to go through a realignment. Now, as many of you know that travel this road often, you get on there and you see that the strange cuts and how it all merges together and so on. Well, we're going to realign the road and we're going to get it properly sealed up and a good overlay, and it will in essence look just like and react just like a new road. And then the other aspect is then we're going to be going down into the Keystone down up to Lafreniere, and we're going to have some roundabouts there. One of the projects that we're embarking on, though, first, while we're getting up to these physical projects, is, believe it or not, the light system in Grand Traverse County is not coordinated. Okay? You know, 1974 in California, they had it, the computers all there seeing how they were controlling traffic. Well, anyways, we're not there. We were under the impression that we were getting closer to that. The board was with the POD system, they called it, and so on. And here about 2 months ago, we kind of swallowed the bitter pill and realized that what we were being told wasn't accurate. Okay, so we've made an investment to do the thorough study on it, and we are going to embark on the equipment, and we are it's very expensive, and we are going to coordinate the county road, the urban areas that have a lot of the traffic lights, but we can't do it in the void. So we're going to do our system, but we have to work with MDOT to match their system, and of course the city of Traverse City to match their system. So there's some interagency cooperation that has to happen, and there's not even it's an assumption that everybody's going to communicate together properly in terms of the technology. We'll cross that bridge when we get there, okay? But I can remember as a kid growing up in my town that if you hit the lights right and you drove the speed limit, you could go through 9 lights and go from one end of the town all the way to the other end of the town and never stop once. And they had that back when I was a kid, you know, a long time ago. So why we aren't there, I don't know, but we aren't, and so we will be. Then, you know, winter part one, December, November, a little dicey, kind of come in really quick, but not a lot of volume. And now we're into the sloppy. It's just like every time it snows, it's like the first snowfall again. So the guys are out. And the gals are out, and they're doing the roads the best they can, but you be patient because it is very strange because we don't have a lot of material out on the road yet, still, believe it or not, so that when we have a snow event, it's almost like the first snow of the year, and it's all greasy and icy and everything, so just be careful. And so I know that you've all met our new manager. Brad's been there. He had a very good review recently in late November. And we're keeping him on. He's doing a great job. He's communicating with the board, the staff. I know he's doing quite a bit of communication with the township partners. And we are open for business in terms of partner relationships. So if you have partner relationships that you're looking at or neighborhoods that want to do special assessment districts and partner with the township and partner with the road commission, we're very keen on getting into the neighborhoods. The asset management plan has been increasing steadily in our county, and that's because of some of these cooperation efforts along with all the investment we're making in the other part of our infrastructure. So, and the very last thing I'm going to say is that, you know, we've had an asset management plan for several years that is getting better and better in terms of we're tweaking it. It's getting better. But we now have, I don't want to call it asset management plan because I don't look at equipment is an asset necessarily, but all our equipment is now totally in a plan, and so that we aren't just getting notified by our superintendent and our operators that we've got bad equipment and we have to go out and buy a whole bunch. It's staging it out so that we know the age and length and service and everything, and based on it, and we're turning over our inventory sooner than we did, and we're not having broken down vehicles, and we're not having a lot of old stuff trying to do heavy duty work, and so we're lining our staff up with that and our asset management plan, and we're even going as far as doing an asset management plan on culverts because we didn't know where the culverts were in the county. They get put in a culvert this big underneath the road. You don't see a bump. You don't see anything. But you get a flood situation, and boom, you can put a VW in the sinkhole. And those are anywhere from $80,000 to $150,000 to repair, and it's never easy, and it's never a good fix. So we're literally taking inventory of everything. Last year we had interns crawling in ditches looking for culverts. I don't know if they're going to come back this year between the poison ivy and the snakes, but you know, we're going to try again and get it done. And so there's a lot of unique things we're trying to do. And this year we got new equipment for ditching, and you're going to see extensive ditching around the area. So if you have areas in the township that you are concerned in terms of like standing water in roads, or you know, you see things that just don't look right on the side of the road, you need to let us know, because we're putting together a punch list and we're trying to get through. And but we spent a lot of money, and we got to have a dedicated crew, and we're going to ditch. And people go, you know, ditching? Yeah, if we actually do ditching and cut back the growth, then it actually keeps the side of the roads better, which drain properly, which keeps the asphalt in better shape. It's just, you wouldn't think cutting trees and brush and ditching is road maintenance, but it is. Mm-hmm. So as boring as it is, it is. So with that, that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
I heard a rumor.
No, maybe and maybe.
Deb is leaving.
Yes, yes, thank you. Thank you for that. That's not a rumor, that's a nightmare. Deb Hunt. Deb Hunt has been with the Road Commission, I would say, at least 30 years, if not 35-ish. I'm going to get it down. Deb has been, so this is my 10th year, or I'm working on my 10th year at the Road Commission, and Deb has been invaluable to our board, invaluable to the management team. She is the librarian, the historian. She knows where the bodies are buried. So yes, as a matter of fact, she's retiring this month right after our organizational meeting. So what she's coming to do is she's going to come in and make sure we do our organizational meeting, and then we have a whole year to figure out what we're going to do. she's not going to be replaceable. I mean, you know, in terms of the job, just the functionality, the history and everything. And, you know, I even suggested a while back, hey, you know, I know she's going to come and retire, so why don't we say, oh, yeah, and retire her that she wants, and then tell her, but you've got to be the clerk of the board and keep her on a little bit. But I think her knowledge, her institutional knowledge is something that's irreplaceable. So, but thank you for that, and she's going to be very missed. And I got to talk to Brad and see exactly what the plans are. And I think that we should host something at the Road Commission if he's not already got something going on with that.
Yeah.
And then let you guys all know, because you know people that's been in the business of municipal government in our county, everybody knows Deb.
Mm-hmm.
You want something done? You call Deb. You know, so she kept us commissioners out of trouble more than once.
Well, thank you very much,
Mark.
Thank
you.
Thanks,
Mark.
Matter of fact, to that end, there's some things to sign in that manila folder to go to the rest of the board, and that retirement is in there, too.
Great. Okay.
So any other public comment at this time? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. There is correspondence and reports in your packet. You'll notice you have a letter from Timothy and Kathleen Strong that live on Munson Avenue, US 31 North. You also have meeting minutes for the Planning Commission in December, Zoning Board of Appeals in November, and Parks Commission in December. The Treasurer's Report for December and the Sheriff's Department stats for October and November. Let's see. Going through those are in the packet for your review, and then from here we move on to the consent calendar. Anne, would you go through the consent calendar for us, please?
Sure. The purpose of the consent calendar is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one board motion without discussion. Any member of the board, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent agenda be removed and placed elsewhere on the agenda for full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. If any item is not removed from the consent calendar, the action noted in parentheses on the agenda is approved by a single board action adopting the consent calendar. This evening you have regular meeting minutes from December 9th, 2019. Recommend approval. The general fund check numbers 15069 through 15143, $95,003.85. The emergency fund check numbers 4226 through 4259, $44,585.25. The receiving fund check numbers 2687 through 2693, the amount of $99,605.60. The escrow fund check numbers 1632 through 1637, the amount of $2,753.07. There were three payrolls, the first dated November 24th, 2019 through December 7th, 2019. Check number 6662 through 6670, the amount of $45,289.89. The second payroll, December 8th through December 21st, 2019. Check number 6671 through 6679, the amount of $43,064.59. And the third payroll, December 22nd, 2019 through January 4th, 2020. Check numbers 6680 through 6688 for $50,142.75. Total payroll $138,445. Total amount paid $380,445. Proposed budget adjustments BA 2020-01 and item H proposed road name Memory Lane.
Okay. Are there any? Is there anything the board would like? Anyone on the board would like anything removed from the consent calendar? Mindy, go ahead.
Memory Lane. I just have a question.
Sure. We'll just put that right at the end. Anyone else? Okay. Anyone from the public? Okay. Hearing none, we'll bring that back to the board. And is there a motion from a board member on the consent calendar? Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar as amended, removing the H1, the road name, off of it. Is there a second?
I support it.
Okay, motion was made by Friend and supported by Bartlett. and we'll do a roll call vote.
Friend.
Yes.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Walters.
Yes.
Forte.
Yes.
Merrill.
Yes.
And Lyle.
Yes.
Okay, we will move on to business before the Board of Trustees. First thing that we have on the agenda is Gordy. We have an update from the Grand Traverse County Board of Commissioners. How are you this evening?
Good evening. Real well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Pardon me?
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm going to give you, I assume Rob's been giving you the quarterly updates, so what I thought I'd do is I'd cover what was happening in the fourth quarter and kind of what's on the agenda going forward. The county, as you probably know, is on a calendar fiscal year, so the past quarter has probably spent a lot of time on the budget. And for a number of us commissioners, we were first time through the process, so it was an interesting process. I guess the important thing is we held the line. We've kept the pension deficit issue in front of us, so we've really held the line on expenses. A couple of the department heads came to the board with compelling reasons to add staff and add expenses, and we pretty much turned them all down, saying as the year progresses, if revenues pick up or expenses are understated, perhaps we can review it. But the board is really committed to addressing the pension deficit. We've committed, as Rob has probably told you, to commit a minimum of $7 million a year towards it. And some of us think that that may not be enough. So we're still looking at additional funding we can put towards it. 2019, we ended up with a fund balance of $9.75 million. And the board instituted a policy of putting a cap on the general fund balance of 25% with a commitment of anything over that 25%. 50% of it would go towards a pension, 25% to a budget stabilization, and 25% to a capital fund. So we ended 2019 with $1.3 million, I hate to use the word excess, but it was funds above and beyond what we had committed.
Positive net revenue.
So we bumped the pension payment to $7.4 million. and put money into these other categories. But I'm optimistic that in 2020 we'll probably go a fair amount above that, so at $7.4 million towards the pension. That still remains a big issue. And still remain in constant contact with MERS, so there are no surprises. So anyway, that remains a big issue. The jail, there's still lots of issues concerning the jail. And in my mind, that probably won't be fully realized or addressed until the new jail is built. I've been pretty outspoken on that issue. It is it's 1960s construction. If you've ever toured the jail and toured some of the newer design jails, you'll see the inefficiencies in manning that jail. And it's constantly, the sheriff reminds us, are there understaffed in correction officers. I think in the year I've been on the board, we've always been around four or five understaffed on correction officers trying to get people to work in that facility. So it's a big issue, and trying to keep it in front of staff, and there has been some progress in that regard. But along that line, they're doing, in my opinion, doing the best they can with a kind of a bad situation in terms of just the physical plant and the layout of the facility. We've continued to contract with Northern Lakes for two mental health staff full-time. That remains an issue. It's in the press all the time about attempted suicides, and Record Eagle has a box score of keeping how many attempts there have been over the years, et cetera, et cetera. So in my mind, they're doing everything really that's practical to address that issue. And I have no concerns, and I have no recommendations, nor does I think the board, to do anything above and beyond what they're doing. I'm really impressed with Captain Barshev, who's running the jail. He's doing everything he can with what he has handed to him. A couple of things they've done is they've upgraded the contract for food services, and they've switched it to a different vendor, and there was a presentation a month or two ago on the quality of the food is going up and a number of different things. It's still a budgetary issue, I mean, but they're very much aware that the food is always an issue with the inmates. They'll never be totally happy, but some of the things that that they've improved on, the quality of the service and the types of food, should be an improvement. Something else that's transpired is there's been a discussion, and I guess there's been some issues with bailiffs, and bailiffs are those people that are in charge of prisoners or inmates when they're into the court system. And in the past, they've been using correction officers from the jail. And we're short on correction officers. We're understaffed, and we're having them spend time escorting people into the courts. So the sheriff came up with an idea several months ago to hire, I think, primarily retired police officers that are available part-time to act as bailiffs at a very reasonable rate, and hopefully it'll free up the correction officers so they're not spending time transporting people back and forth, because when they transport them, they may sit in the court facility for hours just sitting there babysitting the inmates. So they went through a presentation on that, and I think that'll be very positive. Something else that's transpired is something we asked staff to do is give us, again, number of new commissioners, but a breakdown on the assets, the property, real property of the county, and what's the status of the of various assets. So they gave us a kind of a plan of all the facilities, all the land, all the holdings that the county has, and what they're used for, and just kind of an educational presentation. But what we've asked them to do is go back and take a look at the utilization of a lot of these assets. Is there anything that is underutilized in terms of its benefit to the taxpayers that we should dispose of? I mean, there's, as they went through some of these properties, There are properties that were bought for one purpose. That purpose has changed or moved on. Somebody else has come into that facility and is now a warehouse for stuff. And, you know, the question is, why do we have that property? Can we sell it? Can we liquidate it and put those dollars to better use? Because as you well know, if there's a building available, it will get filled up with stuff. And people just don't get rid of things. So we've challenged them to look through all of that and come up with those properties that would make sense to dispose of. So they'll be doing that. Something else that's come up just recently is we're evaluating the benefits of combining the office of the clerk and the register of deeds. That comes up, I guess, every 4 years. The state statute allows you to combine those positions into one elected official. And we've asked the, and there was a lot of dialogue 4 years ago. I've looked at the minutes of that, the dialogue and the pros and cons, and I suspect there'll be the same issues coming forward. But again, we've asked Nate Elger to look at it and come with his recommendation as to is there any benefit of combining those two offices. I actually, the Register of Deeds challenged the commissioners. She said, you really don't know what we do, in essence. So I spent a morning with her in her department, so and looked at what they have on, what they do in that department. I think I've got a pretty good idea. Just one thing I found interesting, I don't know how many of you have ever had an opportunity to spend any time there, but they have a pretty sophisticated system right now where they any new document that's filed, any document is indexed and is put into a system, and it's pretty elaborate, and if the GIS or others have to contribute, it routes it through the system, so they've got a really sophisticated system. So anything new is put on the system, it's indexed, and is retrievable. However, anything prior to 1972, although they've got it on the system, it's not indexed, which means it's on the system, but you can't find it. So they have a huge job in front of them, not only to keep going forward with the current documents that are submitted, and they get about 25,000 documents that they receive annually, but to go back in time and reindex all of the old stuff. So they have a task in front of them. Airport, there's only a couple other items. Airport governance, there's been a lot of discussion on that. The airport is currently operating under a commission form of governance, where the board, county board, appoints commissioners to that body. And they're looking at, we're looking at, should we continue with a commission form of governance or go to an authority? And the differences are very, very subtle. There's like three or four things different. One of the main ones is, as long as they remain a commission, the county has some liability. If they become an authority, the county has no liability. How big of an issue is that? One could ask what that is. Probably the other one is in terms of zoning. If they become an authority, clearly they control their own zoning on their premises. They wouldn't be impacted by the city ordinances. Those are probably the two big items. But it would still, even if it becomes an authority, it's the airport right now is owned by Grand Traverse County and Leelanau County. Grand Traverse 85%, Leelanau 15%. We appoint five board members, they appoint two. We still would come up with something like that. We might expand the I could see the board being expanded to maybe nine members, because one has to be from outside of that district. So there might be a change there, but the commissioners on the authority still would be appointed by the county. So that should be addressed. The target is to get it done this calendar year, get that resolved and get that behind us. One of the big issues on why they need to do something is the current, if you read the current articles of incorporation, they've been, they were written at one time when Traverse City was a part of that, and Traverse City was bought out, and the thing's been modified and changed, and there's just a lot of holes in it, and it in either case, it needs to be redone. There's some, one of the real big gaps is there's no way to arbitrate if Leelanau wants to do one thing and Grand Traverse wants to do something else. Because there are a number of things where an issue comes up, it has to go to the county boards for approval. But if Grand Traverse approves it and Leelanau doesn't or vice versa, there's no way to reconcile it. So that would have to be boiled into any new agreement. TIF 97, I talked about that 6-9 months ago. We're still trying to work with the city to come up with something other than their current proposal of just purely extending it and see if we can come to some compromise where that is, to, in my mind, to the benefit of the county. So that's ongoing. Senior centers being talked about. It's been talked about for some time. What came as somewhat of a surprise, to me at least, was the initial discussion was there's going to be fundraising for the senior center, which is owned by the city, not the county. And I was, now they've changed their mind and said they want to do a countywide millage. So the question comes up, if it's a city property, can a county fund it, and do you want to do it via millage? So that's that needs to be addressed. Lastly, I'll just mention Pugsley. I'm sure you're aware of that. That was a kind of a win-win. I was really touting that as a real advantage to everybody and what was going to happen there, and that has completely fallen apart. But I did hear from the sheriff that they planned, the county plans to continue with going forward with the 20 acres that was carved out for the gun range. But it's unfortunate that that's fallen apart, and can't get a straight answer of really who's at fault of the thing. But again, that's a real shame. So that's what. But again, going forward, in my mind, I think the finances of the county, we're going to have to keep a real tight rein on that. And I'm somewhat comfortable with the $7 million when you look at our payout on the defined benefit pension. It's going up in the next few years, $8, $9 million a year. If we're putting $7 million in, that's maybe a little bit short. So,
does any board member have any questions for Gordy on any topic? Gordy, if we can reach you, I'm sure you have your email address on the county website.
Yep.
If anyone has a follow-up question,
and
or if anyone from the public.
My phone number's there, too.
What's that?
My phone number's there, too.
Okay.
Of course, you'll get voicemail, but I will answer.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Gordy.
Thank you very much. Okay, we will move on to the assessing department, and we have Joel Bremer and Susan Caracos here to go over just an update on some general information from the assessing department.
We've pretty much wrapped up tax roll for 2020. We did basically 685 deeds with 12 splits. Joel and I both have to take 16 credit hours of training in order to keep our certification, so we have that to look forward to this year. And as far as Board of Review, March is pretty well set. We've got alternate dates set for because of the election, but we are looking for one additional March Board of Review member. We had Frank leave us and go over to Green Lake, so we have to replace him. We do have Ted and Renee, but we still need a third. And we have Sharon as an alternate. So if you know of anyone who wants to be on the March Board of Review or as a Board of Review member, we would appreciate it. So that's about all I have. Joel?
Hi.
Hi.
Excuse me. In the state of Michigan, assessing is the process of valuing real and personal property for the purpose of taxation. So one of the ways we get there is a thing called a 20% review. It was designed that way so within a five-year period, we will have touched every parcel in the township, and that includes personal property as well. So with roughly 200 fair weather days, we're trying to look at 1,532 parcels. So it's a bit of a scramble. The state has been promoting technology, and we've done that here as well with pictometry. I was the primary user for this software program this year, and it was an immense help because I could look at one of these 1,500 properties and determine at what point I really needed to get out there and document it for change. So it's actually bought me a little bit of time to focus efforts in other classifications like commercial. And that's needed as well because sometimes you have to look at a class and just spend some good time absorbing and analyzing the data to figure out if you're on track with where the market's going. The other thing we have to do is touch, photograph, and measure new construction. So this year there was 143 permits. Of those, 52 were single-family homes. Since 2016, there's been 450 permits and roughly 150 single-family homes in East Bay Township. I would anticipate most of that 150 is probably new residents. And when we look at overall value, so for 19, the assessed value climbed $41 million, roughly, and true cash went up about $101 million. What I didn't do for you was the math to determine what kind of taxable dollars that generated. But at the end of the day, we've all heard it, every little bit helps. Any questions?
I would touch on, I've worked with Susan and Joel with tax tribunals, and you guys have received updates on those regularly. But just to kind of review, we have the Center ICE tax tribunal, which we're sitting in abeyance still of Genoa Township. The state ruled in favor for Genoa Township, which we helped review their analysis and support it, as well as MTA's legal defense fund. Thank you. So they're now looking at valuation with Genoa Township, and I think I did just get an email. They're going back on the appeal, so they're going. Yep. So we're still in a holding pattern and waiting on that. Olson's, we have done kind of an initial valuation and. We didn't do the full reappraisal, or we did the, help me with that, Susan, the gentleman that we went over and did kind of an analysis Zacharys. Of the, excuse me, huh?
Gary Zacharys.
Yes, for appraisal type. So we're still working on that. As a matter of fact, they did the interrogatories 2 days, huh? Yeah, 2 days before Christmas. So while everyone was wrapping their presents, they were down with the attorney going over how they have assessed that property. Stellar Properties, we have settled with Stellar without going any further with the Michigan Tax Tribunal, and I think that's been a good resolution with those properties. And then DTE is actually has property and tax tribunal in a multiple municipalities across I think so, is it all over the state or just the northern tier?
I think the northern tier, but it's a limited number of.
Yeah, so we have partnered with a lot of those other municipalities and their attorneys where some of those attorneys represent multiple municipalities, so trying to get some joint movement on those instead of dealing with each of them independently. So you'll continue to receive updates on those, and just again trying to protect that tax base and the valuation of it, because as the burden changes as we if we don't hold that up. So yeah. Anything, any other questions? Or well, thank you very much for coming tonight. And it certainly is keeping them busy going to, taking a look at all of these properties. So, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we will move on to, we have on here election and tax collection update, and I just wanted to give Sue and Tracy just a minute to update the board and, on those two items, because it's kind of getting to be a busier time with elections mm-hmm. in 2020 mm-hmm. and also tax collection as well. So,
sure. I've got a couple of things. We have just under 9,700 registered voters now in East Bay Township. Of those, we have just under 3,100 that want to be on the permanent absentee list to always receive an application for an absentee ballot before every election. So Helen and I have been busy printing all of those. We just finally got the blank application stock in, and so we've been printing out all of those, folding them, and getting them ready to go to the postage by Thursday. So everyone should see those applications by the beginning of next week in their mailboxes. What folks will realize when they open up this application is it's a little bit different than what they're used to seeing. March 10 is our next regular election, and that is a closed primary election for the presidential candidates. That is the only thing that is on this ballot, but it's closed, so each of the major parties decided they wanted to have their own ballot. So if you wish to receive a ballot and participate in this election, you must select what party you wish to receive a ballot for. It's a little bit different than what folks see on a regular election year. So if there is no selection, if someone doesn't mark which party they want to participate in, Helen and I will be sending that ballot application back out with a little note that asks them if they wish to participate. They need to select either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. The lesser parties hold a caucus. They don't do a primary election, so you won't see the other parties listed there. The other thing that you'll notice with this application is the Bureau of Elections through the state of Michigan has decided that as a primary election, this too should have the opportunity for you to say that you wish to receive an absentee ballot for the general election. Well, East Bay may have two elections before the general election in November, so it will be a little confusing if people pick that they want to have the March 10th ballot and the November 3rd ballot. You're still going to receive a May application and an August election. So you can just say you want a March only ballot. That's perfectly acceptable, but you do also have the opportunity to have a November. There was a lot of discussion and a lot of argument on how it may confuse all of our voting residents, but the Bureau felt that this was something that enhanced the ability for voter participation. If they only had to fill out one application and take care of two elections, they wanted to be able to do that. So that's a little bit different. You can always contact the clerk's office if you've got questions. There is not a third ballot style. We don't have any local proposals. So it's either a Republican ballot, a Democrat ballot, or you don't need to or don't care to vote in the election. Also, candidate packets for all 14 elected offices in East Bay Township will be available for you to pick up in the clerk's office or at the county clerk's office in the next week or so. We are just waiting on a couple of pieces of documents so that we have a full packet ready for you to pick up. There is a time period to do that. You can do either by signature petitions, or new this year is you can do a $100 filing fee. And so we will be working with folks that want to do that. We're the two highest vote getters in the different offices will receive their $100 back. If you weren't one of the top two vote getters, that money stays within the township. Or you can do by petition signatures. Those have to be back to us by 4 p.m. on April 21. So you want to make sure, if whichever way you plan to do that, that you get that paperwork filed so that you can be on a ballot for August. The filing deadline is a little bit later if you wish to run without party affiliation, but if you wish to run as a party candidate, that April 21 date at 4 p.m. is the latest you can file the paperwork. Let's see. We are getting ready to train our new election inspectors for the March 10 election. We have, I think, 12 new right now. We are always encouraging new folks to come on board with us. We have 4 precincts and at least 3,000 absentee ballots that will be counted on election day. So we're always looking for folks to join us. If they can come and see us, get an application, we can get them on the schedule to do the training, and that will be taking place the end of January and early February. Does anyone have any questions for me?
No? I think we're good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tracy?
So I just did a couple of calculations for you. We have received 400 more payments from 2018 to 2019, so we're up. And we've received 83% of our taxes to be collected for the 2019 tax year so far, so I think that's pretty good. And also I wanted to make the board aware we are looking at possibly changing our credit card processor. We've had a couple of presentations from a couple of different companies, and there are some added features that might be helpful to our residents, so we're taking a look at that. And of course we're always watching the investments and the stability of the economy to see where the rates are and what's going on. So any questions?
I have questions.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Tracy.
And we will move on to consultants update. And we have Steve Kernovic here with Manor Kusterison.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, you can just say Manor. That's usually, that's easier, you know, just to say Manor. So okay. Manor CPA. So thank you. I think I got at everybody's spot. Should have a revenue and expenditure report. Just kind of some general comments. Normal work on for the quarter. Obviously, your last final quarter too for 2019. Nothing, you know, really out of the ordinary. Kind of just the normal processes kind of the beginning processes of the audit prep work. Started this quarter. Kind of just to give you some time frames, March 16th through March 18th, myself and one of my senior managers will be on site to do audit prep work. So we'll be here getting everything ready for the audit, kind of gathering things from the clerk and the treasurer's office to do that audit prep. The audit is scheduled for the week of April 6th. So we'll be on site then to probably one or two days each and just to kind of add support to or for the auditors and for the clerk and treasurer also. And then April the 13th, I will be back here, you know, because that'll be a normal report meeting and so forth. So I'll be here for that meeting with the first quarter of 2020 and then hopefully a little more accurate numbers of 2019, kind of the final pre-audit numbers should be available at that point in time. So we'll be able to touch on those a little bit. I didn't go through a lot of detail in the report I put in front of you just because, you know, we're at January 13th and the year just ended 13 days ago. So there's a lot of receivables and payables, a lot of the accrual entries that we need to do to get ready for the audit. So a lot of those aren't in this report. So as you can see, so I'll just kind of, like I said, touch on some of the totals here. Looking at revenues in total and really only looking at the general fund because, like I said, there'll be a lot of adjustments for the general fund. A lot of those other funds will even have more adjustments, like water and sewer being on the accrual basis. There'll be a lot of adjustments in that fund. So I hate to give you a whole lot of information right now and have 75% of a change, you know, and so I don't want to waste your time looking at that. So So we'll just kind of focus on the general fund. Looking at the general fund revenues there on the first page, as you can see, that year-to-date balance column, almost $1.6 million in total revenues. A few revenues that will need adjustment, as you can see, kind of starting at the top, current property taxes actually shows more property tax revenue coming in than budgeted. So we'll have some adjustments there, probably bringing that revenue down, actually, to when we book the receivables and deferrals. So that'll probably come more in line with that 415 that you've got budgeted once we make those adjustments. Revenue sharing, as you can see, that's under budget right now, about $163,000. Looking at the estimate of what the February payment will be, which is, will get accrued back to December, it's about $161,000. So that'll probably come in pretty close to budget. And then also you can see the cable franchise revenue, about center of the page there, budgeted $190,000, $142,000 came in. Last year we booked about a $50,000 receivable there, so that'll again shake out pretty close to budget. So anticipate having about $175,000 additional dollars in revenues being booked. Anticipate total revenues coming in at roughly $1.8 million. And if you look at the budget of $1.9 million, and you have to factor out, if you really look at true cash dollars in the door and the accruals, if you factor out those two lines called utilization, that says utilization of election equipment, utilization of fund balance for parks equipment or parks commission, if you factor those two lines out, the budget is about $1.77 million. Revenues are going to come in real close to that, probably within a percent, I would think, as far as total revenues for the general fund. Turning, again, just kind of touch on some real quick totals here. Page 2, election expense. As you can see, election expenditure, $39,000 in budget, $21,000 spent. There on page 2, had some equipment purchases, but no elections in 19. So obviously that's substantially under budget, which is good. Continuing on into the assessor, that's a contracted area. You can see $193,000 budgeted, about $150,000 spent. We're still waiting for that final quarter, the bill to come in. So that'll be a recognition of a payable when that gets booked back. So there'll be an adjustment there. Continuing on to the next page, page 3, Township Hall activity, 265. You can see that's down about $30,000, under budget about $30,000, and mainly capital outlay, kind of those last few lines that you can look at there. Some of the island out here, the front island, was not done during 2019, and some other of those expenditures came in under budget. So about $17,000 of that $30,000 was basically under budget related to capital outlay there on page 3. Turning one more page to planner and zoner, kind of falls over from page 3 to page 4, but looking at the total there, about $168,000 of budgeted for planning and zoning administrator. So we've spent about 68% of the budget. Obviously, you were without an employee for a little bit of time. You contracted out there, so there's some costs that weren't incurred. So that's under budget. They're about 30% roughly, which I think obviously in 2020 you've got a person, and that, you know, that'll balance itself out for 2020. Turning another page to page 5. Parks Commission. Parks Commission, as you can see there, looking at the far right column, you've spent about 68% of that budget. It's about $102,000 under budget, mainly due, as you can kind of scan down those expenditures, park land acquisition, the Artibus Lake, the Grace McDonald, some of those costs you didn't incur at all, and some of them came in under what you had budgeted. So about 100 of the 102 was related to capital outlay that was not incurred or spent less than what you had budgeted.
Some of those are intended to be put aside later. We've been changing that a little bit, so you won't see the utilization of fund balance. You will see basically we'll go ahead and go to negative net revenues and then show how that utilization of fund balance is going to come up at the end to cover that. Same thing in the reverse on the expenditures. When they're planning on saving for something. We won't show that in there. We'll go ahead and let the positive net revenues come down to the bottom, and then we'll show that being put aside for specific purposes. So that's a change that you'll see in 2020 in the budget.
That's great. That's a good way to, very good way to handle it going forward. So, and then the only other one there on page 6, as you can see about the center of the page, that 865 activity for insurances. Insurances were only about 68% expended because you would bid insurances, so you're able to have some cost savings there on insurances in the 2019 fiscal year. So it was about $8,700 under budget, which is a good thing there for the insurance and bond activity. And so I just kind of roughed out some numbers. We turn one last page, roughed out some numbers there. As you can see, if you look on page 7 in that column that says year-to-date balances, and it says that third line says net revenues and expenditures. So that's showing a positive number. So that's showing that revenues over expenditures, at least right now, preliminarily, about $50,000, that $50,113. What I would anticipate with those receivables and so forth that we need to book, about $175,000 of additional revenues will be recorded, and then some expenditures and payables, accrued payroll and different things like that. I just estimated that at roughly $77,000 of additional expenditures that need to be booked. So again, preliminarily, and we talked about that. Don't be surprised if that number changes up or down by $50,000 one way or another. Potential add to fund balance of roughly $148,000 for the year ended December 31st, 2019, at least based on the numbers that we know 13 days after year end. So that's kind of how things are shaking out for the general fund. Like I said, a lot better numbers once we get deeper in and booking those accruals and the receivables and payables and doing a lot more of that audit prep going forward into 2020 back to 2019. I know it's a lot of information, but I think also Beth had shared some of that information with you maybe at previous meetings or at least had some discussions, so I didn't want to labor a lot of that information.
One of the other things that you'll see going forward in this year is as we take a look at what the Department of Treasury ends up doing with the I'm going to say line items.
Chart of accounts.
Thank you. Yep. We'll look at probably changing some of those. For example, the Department of Treasury isn't necessarily particularly thrilled with how we have the health insurance broken out separate from some of the other HR benefits. So we'll look at moving those together and moving them into an area where they would rather see them in the chart of accounts. So while the budget we approved, sticks obviously, and we utilize that, we'll see that shifting around a little bit to accommodate those. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we're waiting for Treasury. They were supposed to put it out as of December 31st, and we're still waiting for that. But yes, that'll be some probably relatively significant changes for all governments, not just you. I mean, for the townships, the county, the city. I mean, everybody's going to have to adopt their chart of accounts and make modifications to it. If some will be bigger changes, some will be. In your case, I don't think maybe even your fund numbers will change, but I think you get in a lot of places. I mean, we have several clients that, we've got, 20 funds that are going to have to be renumbered and changed and so forth at a couple of our county clients. So there's some bigger changes there that will need to, that will need to take place. And we'll work through those and help the ladies with getting those in order for sure.
Any questions for Steve? Okay, great. Okay, great. Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Careful traveling tonight.
Yes, I will.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and Brian Souza is here with Wade Trim, who kind of bring us up to speed on some of the items that he's been working on.
Good evening. I think the first thing on your list was the in situ form contract amendment. Just a little background on that. Excuse me. That project is also known as the U.S. 31 Forest Main Rehabilitation Project, down along U.S. 31, kind of west of 4 Mile. And the project was bid out in February last year, was awarded a little time after that to the contractor. Contractor then noted, I'm giving the kind of some milestone items in a nutshell. Contractor noted that he was having issues getting a sub on board to do some of the work. Contractor that was selected, he just does the relining of your force main, digging down to the force main, repaving, pumping the sewage around that project. That's all done by a sub. Okay, so he was having trouble getting somebody on board to do that work. And it was probably late summer, the township said, you know what, why don't we, because, you know, this is a big project to be starting in September, October, November, on US 31 when we have to repave. Township said, tell you what, why don't we hold off until spring? Here's a contract amendment for you to contemplate if we do that. Here's some conditions that you'll need to follow and meet, but we're good with putting it off till spring in 2020. And at that point, they said, nope, we want to get it done. We're going to self-perform the work instead of having a sub. So go ahead and issue the notice to proceed, and let's get going. So we do that. Well, then the project doesn't move forward. They're going to show up. They didn't show up. They had some issues. You know, a host of, I don't want to call them excuses, because I think a lot of them were true. Long story short, we're in October, and we finally say, look, guys, we can't start this project now. We finally got somebody higher up in the company to get involved. He has now kind of righted that ship. He has admitted that they didn't take this serious enough and they had issues and they weren't addressing them as they should have. He wants to make it better. I said, well, here's that contract amendment that we provided in August. Maybe you want to read through that and contemplate, you know, starting in the spring. Otherwise, your contract time is up. You're supposed to be done. We can seek the money to do this project from your bonds. You're going to have to pay liquidated damage. It was going down a road that nobody really wanted to go down. So long story short, he says, you know what, I'll agree to that amendment, and let's get started in the spring. So the amendment was in your packet, and what we're really looking forward to from the board tonight is approval to sign that. They have signed it on their end. We want to sign it on our end and kind of formalize this process. A couple of the things that are in there, one is if that force main that is in the ground that we were going to repair breaks at all during this winter period, they're responsible for paying for the repair and making that workable. The other condition is that they start within 2 weeks of frost laws coming off in the spring. Another condition is they pay for our time that the township has paid for a pre-construction meeting, meetings to try and get them here, correspondence with the road commission, with MDOT, with all of the parties involved. They said, yes, we'll cover that cost. Because a lot of those we got to start over again in the spring. There was a condition in there that we added about notifying the bond authority company that they know this project is going to take longer than a year, that the bond will remain open. Same thing with insurances, that those will all remain current and available if needed. So there's one or two minor ones that I'm forgetting. But essentially, you know, the onus is all on them now to make this right and begin that process in the springtime. And quite frankly, I'm kind of happy that it's going in the spring, because if they really would have started in October, who knows what would have happened. MDOT was getting concerned. We were concerned. The township's concerned. So we're better off starting this in the spring.
So two key things when we were going through this. And one is the third contract term where they accept responsibility for if anything goes wrong between now and then. That was huge. They did not want any part of that term when we first broached that with them. And as time went on and they needed to rectify this, that became acceptable. So that was a huge thing. And the other thing was, as I was telling Brian, when I was at a Michigan Association of Township Supervisors workshop last September, I think it was, August, there was an engineering firm from downstate that was presenting, and I was telling them about this project with In Situ Forum, and they were really interested in hearing the results from it. But what was interesting to me was they had worked with In Situ Forum many times downstate and had nothing but positive things to say about this firm. Looking at them online, I mean, they are an industry standard. They're all over the nation and have a very good reputation. So we're not really quite sure what this aberration was, but whatever it is, we seem to be on the right path now.
Yeah, they're not a small firm. They're well known. We, as Wade Trim, have worked with them on many projects through our other offices very similar to this and never had an issue. So I think this is kind of an anomaly on their end and had a project get sideways on them, and now they're stepping in and trying to make it right. So.
Is there a motion to approve amendment to section 005200, the agreement between East Bay Charter Township and Insituform Technologies, with authorization for the supervisor to sign the amendment?
I'll support that.
Okay. Oh, did I make the motion? Okay.
So I think you
I'll
did.
Made that motion. Friend,
good one.
And supported by Walters. We'll go ahead and do a roll call vote on that, Ann. Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Corte?
Yes.
Okay. And then, Brian, we'll go into the Master Utility Plan.
Yep. A little update on the Master Utility Plan. The Planning Commission did have a chance to review it and had some comments on the plan. We talked about that at the last Planning Commission meeting. We talked about everything from moving the development line, which is the power lines on the south side of the township, moving that north or south, adding development area, shrinking the development area. We talked about the plan in general, how it's more of a tool than just a study. Matter of fact, Wade Trim, have used it several times with questions from developers about line size and where they might want to develop and, you know, what's involved and things of that nature. So it's been very helpful so far. One thing that I want to note with this board that I also talked about with the Planning Commission was the plan in general was based on the current zoning that the township has in place. So how big of a sewer line are we going to need? Well, what's the zoning in that area? How much flow can we expect? What's the density of homes? Things of that nature. So as that changes, this plan can change. So if we make an area that might be designated as agricultural area now into a highly dense residential area. Yeah, thank you. Jeez. And the flow would increase, we can change the size of that line and update the master plan and keep all of that updated. So it's not, I don't see this as something that gets put on a shelf and doesn't get updated. It'll be something that's continually changing and evolving as the township does. So did have some very good comments from the planning commissioners. We've got a couple of items to adjust, I think, based on some comments that Mindy had at the last meeting. Some of the ways that we were depicting drainage areas and things of that nature and missing some of the pressure reducing valves on some of the water system, not listing or labeling those on the map. So a couple updates, but other than that, I think we're in good shape, unless there's any.
And this has been obviously in our packets and gone to the Planning Commission and the Township Board, and I know that some developers have noticed it and seen it as well, so they've had opportunity as well to comment on it too. So, and I really want to thank Brian Souza and John DeVozo in kind of coming up with kind of this holistic approach to what needed to be done with water and sewer within the township, and we have a good system, and we had a very good system. How do we improve it, and how do we go from where we're at to make things better for developers, the township, the ratepayers? Ed really looked at this whole thing with the ordinance rewrite, the master utility plan, and the rate analysis. And those things all together, these gentlemen have worked very hard on this with me, and I think it's a good thing that we're accomplishing and moving forward with as the township board. So with that, are there any questions and comments for Brian on the utility plan? Sure.
So Don Brady suggested that we needed to have a capital improvement plan for that which is already existing. Mm-hmm. Have we done that at all?
No, and one of the things that I'll be talking with Claire about is as we complete these things and then we move into a more a more defined capital improvement plan, a very thorough process from that. And that's something as well with the board I'd like to talk about, you know, how much we want to go. We can do that with planning and with Claire, but also where the board wants to come in as far as any strategic planning, any goal setting, that would actually be before that, and setting that CIP. I mean, we can definitely move for a CIP from this, but
just, you know, want to make sure that, you know, just one of those things that I've said at the fire department too, is that that CAP plan is really necessary, and we all know that there are locations in this country where nobody knows where the culverts are, let alone the sewer pipes are, or what the sewer pipes are made out of, or the water pipes. And,
right.
You know, I don't think that's what we have here. I think we're too, I'll say, new of a community for that. But I just want to make sure that we are paying attention to, you know, those older pipes and knowing what's going on.
They'll find them when they dig.
And don't forget, too, we do a lot of that operation through the DPW. So a lot of that capital planning takes place at the Board of Public Works and with the DPW as well. So,
yeah. And I guess, Brian, a question I would have is, and I wrote there, I'm assuming some kind of a program where you put in the maximum number of houses that would go on something, the size of line that has been needed. Correct?
Yes.
Because I guess my concern is when we start looking at this stuff, especially, you know, out to the far end, it might be all ag now, but how much bigger is a pipe going to have to be if you turn it into high-density residential, and does it make sense to plan that out for that cost-wise? If you never, you know, you can have too big a pipe, I guess, but to have a big enough pipe so when all of a sudden 20 years down the road we thought we had a farm there and now we got, you know, hundreds of houses.
Right. Well, there's a point of diminishing returns when you begin that process, because you can always build something bigger and become more dense than what you had planned for. You know, maybe we have high rises down by Rennie Lake at some point, you know, who knows. So there's got to be a little bit of give and take, a little bit of, you know, future decision making based on how old a pipe can be before you really have to come and replace it anyway. So, for example, if we make all these planning decisions for pipe sizing and distribution size based on your current zoning, and some of those pipes get put in, you probably won't see a whole lot of development in the life of that pipe. Let's say it's a 30 to 50 year life on that pipe. Before it needs to be replaced anyway. So by the time it's at the end of its useful life, you may have then changed your zoning and you may have realized a bigger development area and more dense population in those areas. So then you would upgrade the size of that line. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg and process to make that happen. But we, you know, a lot of times when we're putting lines in or planning for lines in an area that is somewhat commercial but not developed, say Hammond Road would be a big one for this, you can design it for what's currently there and what the zoning calls for, but we'll usually try and upsize that line one or two sizes just to make sure that it'll provide the service life that it needs to.
You don't have to actually have a scope of work. When you do this, you have to have your constraints. You need to know what, you know, the variables are. So to go into a project, you know, the planning commission wanted to move the growth boundary after they had finished the project. And it was like, wait a second, you know, you have to start somewhere. You have to have a defined scope of work or your scope creep is going to go crazy on you. And so we really have to use what is in place right now so that everybody understands what the limitations are.
Brian, I was kind of interested in this sanitary sewer system, RU, and acreage map. Isn't that a little bit what this does is takes a look at what it's what the build-out is, right?
That's right. So it takes what your zoning is, and it determines the number of RUs over a certain area based on zoning so that we can then determine how much flow we might see and then from that determine how big of a pipe we might need.
Okay. Yeah. You'll want to take a peek at that one in particular, Glenn, because it gives the acreage and then the REUs. I think what we're looking for, this is the adoption. Oh, go ahead, but let me just, what we're looking for is if we need anything changed in this or if we're looking at the adoption of the water and sanitary sewer main master plan. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I just, Mindy's comment I find intriguing with the growth boundary line, because I've talked about being in the black hole for a very long time where our property is some of the last big pieces within the growth boundary with no real opportunity to tie in. It'd be millions and millions to tie in from Hammond to Wilsey Road. It's not going to happen. So those big tracts of land are starting to get somewhat subdivided, but staying as single-family units. So the development to put a 12-inch pipe in front of our house, I'm not really sure what it's going to carry if we ever get to that point. Because once you hit the power line around 720 High Lake, that area, you know, it's just going to die because we're not going to go past the growth boundary line. So I get it. I'd like to see there be more growth there. I'd like to be able to see an opportunity for growth, but we probably realistically aren't going to be doing any pipes in the ground from, I would say, if we get to Supply Road, we're lucky, at least right there.
Right. I agree. And really what this does is it helps us plan for those. So if we ever get to that point, I mean, we've moved the sewer system out quite a way, so a lot of pipe had to go in to get there. Well, the first stick of pipe that we put in heading that direction, we want to make sure that that's the right size for the next one, for the next. So when we get out there, we're all good. We don't have to come back and replace this. But, you know, the discussion about moving the development boundary, you know, that will probably invoke some hearty discussions. You know, you get people that feel very strong one way or the other. If we move it, if we shrink that development boundary, we're just going to cause urban sprawl because everybody will start to develop on the outside of that boundary because, one, they don't have to extend sewer, they don't have to extend water, they can use septic system, you know, things of that nature. So it's a double-edged sword when you start looking at adjusting those boundaries for sure.
Right.
And the Planning Commission also wanted to expand the growth boundary, if you will, into the lakes area. You get the water and sewer out into the lakes area.
It'd be great to have water and sewer out there, but
as crazy as that really sounds, I mean, sooner or later it's going to have to happen.
Yeah, it'll show
up. You look around some of these areas that are not in East Bay, where all of a sudden they've got major problems. They've got to put water and sewer in around the lakes. Sooner or later, I think, maybe not in my lifetime, but we're going to see it here, I'm sure.
But then we're also going to have to be looking for funding opportunities.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, definitely, it would be wonderful to be able to take reins on that.
Well, the one thing we are blessed with is sandy soil.
Some areas.
Blessing and a curse at times.
Right. Okay. Would the board choose to take action, and is there a motion regarding the water and sanitary sewer main master plan as presented?
So we need to take it to a public hearing and stuff, correct?
No, that doesn't.
Oh, we don't?
No.
So can I move to approve amendment section? Oh, that's the wrong one. Sorry.
Yeah, that's, I'm trying to get back up to the
master.
Mm.
So water and sanitary.
Yeah. Mm. Hang on. I got the wrong thing. I'll make a motion to approve with changes as discussed at the Planning Commission, the water and sewer main master plan for East Bay Charter Township.
Okay. Is there support for that motion?
I support it.
Okay. Motion is made by Walters and supported by Bartlett. Mm-hmm. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed by no? Okay. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you for your work on this.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Yep.
All right, you too. Let's see, we'll move on to the water and sewer rate analysis.
That's important.
And that is John DeVozo. Bye, Gordy. Have a good evening. John, if you wouldn't mind stepping up here, and I've included in the packet here, this is John DeVozo, director of the Grand Traverse County Public Works, and I've included in the packet the RFP that was put out by the DPW for the water and sewer rate study. You'll recall that initially, at first, I thought this was going to be East Bay Township alone, but all five water and sewer townships in the Grand Traverse region have decided to go in on this. It will be very specific to the townships. It's a little different than the ordinances, where we kind of end up with the same skeleton of ordinances. There will be a little bit more different because we get our water from different places and so forth. But that RFP is in here, and then the UFS response, which is the response that the BPW has approved, is in there as well. It does, I'll leave it there and turn it over to John, but we do have some decisions to make on our behalf here at the township.
Thank you. So this is phase two of the ordinance rewrites. So what we've done, we have the drafts are 90% ready. We're waiting on the rate studies so that we can include some definitions and then various wordings within the ordinance with regard to the rates. So how you go about setting rates will determine what language we use in the ordinance. So currently we bill sewer based on RUs. And we do bill water through metered use. However, the metered rate is the same for all customers as a minimum. It includes an allowance, and then there's a rate per gallon or cubic foot or 100 cubic feet, technically. So how we go about designing the rates will determine what language we use in the ordinance. So I think I beat that horse. You're pretty dead right there.
we can't move forward without the other.
Right. And then there is a decision on the methodology on rate setting. So there's language within the ordinance that says the townships will use the most current technology available to rate set. That technology is meters. And we have the ability to charge sewer use based on water meter use. So if the township is so inclined, because there is two charges or two costs for this rate analysis, one is if we use our current rate methodology and move forward that way. The other one is, are we going to take on the current industry standard, which is meters? Basically, you pay per volume for both water and sewer. If we go that methodology, then there's an increased cost for that aspect of things. Her proposal, her name is Dawn Lund with UFS. I have worked with her before, and she is fantastic. I did work with the other firm. It wasn't Baker Tilly at the time, but his name was Tom Trasiak. He's also fantastic. The Baker Tilly proposal was more generic, and it was a lump sum, and Dawn really put time and effort into analyzing what she thought our needs were and detailed that out in her proposal. So I thought she did an excellent job on that. Prices were per system, so I appreciated that because some townships don't have to participate, and if they don't, there's no cost to them. So the rate analysis or financial analysis does involve the annual budget for each system. It involves some capital improvement planning, such as reliability studies, the most current that we have for the township, and then anything that the township has in their planning repertoire as far as water sewer. She'll take all of that information and then develop, quote-unquote, revenues necessary to meet the operating needs, meet the planning needs, any future engineering needs, and then from that she'll design a rate system, and then we will present that to the township. So the question that we have right now is that this contract is through the Board of Public Works. They have accepted her proposal to work in the in a new rate methodology, which is based on meter use. Ultimately, those rates are set based on capacity at each connection, which translates to meter size. So instead of one monthly rate per customer plus usage, you will have a monthly rate per customer based on their meter size plus a cost per cubic foot or gallons or however the township so chooses. I don't know why we measure in cubic feet.
So
I don't know.
If I could just draw the board's attention to page, it says on the bottom 188, and that's actually the page number from the Board of Public Works. But that's in the summary of the important proposal elements. And you'll see in the last solid bullet point there, industry standard, as John was mentioning, is to charge a monthly customer by the meter size and for usage. So to do that, we would need to do the full cost of service study, which is about, about $5,000, $6,000 more. And then, and below it says, and I think this is important, a cost of service study is a method to equitably allocate the revenue requirements. So that's really, I think, what we're truly mm-hmm. trying to get at, so that we're not having subsidization from, you know, one type of user to another type of user. Sometimes in a rate system, you may want that, but you want it decidedly, not, you know what I mean? You want to say, okay, for these reasons, we would structure it this way. But I don't think that's what we're trying to get at with this overall water and sewer structure at this point, correct?
Well, the recommended course of action is that we distribute cost as equitably as possible amongst the class of user. So you have, there's various classes within a water and sewer system, residential being one. But within the commercial environment, there are small commercial users like offices, and there are larger ones like restaurants. And right now, everybody's paying the same. So one could argue that the high-end user is paying a lot less on this system, and the residential end of things is paying a lot more than what they're supposed to. Supposed to is the wrong word. It depends on what methodology you use. When the system was created back in the 70s, this is the way everybody charged. There were engineering studies, and everything was done based on a factor. But over time, and with this, the technology that these meters have nowadays, it just makes sense that you use a gallon, you pay for a gallon, mm-hmm. and the customer pays the same on the usage end of things. On the capital side of things, a major portion of your budget are fixed costs. So those costs are determined based on staff, size, what equipment you need, how many water towers you have, whether you have to treat your water. All of that stuff has to get developed so that you can have multiple-story buildings, so that you can have large industrial complexes that receive fire protection. So the capital cost to build your system is increased for that, and yet some of your customers don't need that. So it's just transferring all those costs equitably amongst your customers. The current technology is through metered use. That meter represents the amount of capacity available to you at any given time. So if you need a 4-inch line run into your building, there's a much greater capacity on that line than there is a 3/4 or a 1-inch into a home or a business. Some offices have 1-inch leads too. So the difference between the 1-inch and the 4-inch translates to higher cost. So when you move to this new methodology, you're now transferring that cost and applying it equitably. So one is much higher per month than the other. And these, we're not creating or recreating the wheel. These have all been done. This analysis is recommended by AWWA, and they've been around for a long time. I've been here working on six. I worked in another community south of us for 13 or 14. And we all charged per RU, and we all charged the same way. So we were able to work with one community in Wexford where we went to this newest methodology. There are some growing pains. There's a learning curve associated with it, especially on your end. But for the most part, it was pretty smooth transition. This is not also some sort of magic trick to try to create revenue for the systems. We already have your revenue. We're going to tell you what revenue you need. All we're going to do is come up with a methodology that says if you implement these rates, you'll get this revenue, which is basically the same revenue that you have now. Yep. So the idea is not to...
It's not a revenue-generating proposition.
Right.
It's equitably distributing the cost on the users.
And then, you know, again, once this is developed, then we'll have the ability to tell you what impact you have on each class of your customers so that we can answer questions if we have to, and or we can explain the situation if we have to.
Okay. Mindy?
So when you were able to switch to your other community and you suggested there were growing pains, I'm wondering if those growing pains were the restaurant customers that had the minimum wage type jobs and then they had another fee on that, and they were talking about the stresses associated with, you know, paying their workers, and now they have a larger bill. I mean, what kind of jump were they seeing, I guess, is the question.
Well, restaurants were not the class of customers. The big box stores are the class of customers that are going to see a tremendous increase in rates.
Okay.
The larger the line size, 4, 6, 8 inch, especially with fire lines, those customers are going to see more on a monthly fixed basis, as opposed to right now they use so much water, their usage is making up a lot of the revenue. Typical McDonald's should not see too much of a difference. Although I will say that currently your rates are not on the water side of things, are not based on REUs at all, and they should have been. Yeah. So everybody has one REU on your system for rates. And that, to me, that was a mistake. But I think your rate per gallon is high enough, and the volume that you sell is high enough that it makes up for all of that difference. Mm-hmm. So again, there's subsidies on different levels with your customers.
Yeah, I totally get that. I'm just wondering what the biggest increase that one of these, besides, you know, and even Home Depot, they're not the highest paying for the entry-level worker around, and I was just wondering if they're, when they're screaming, that's what they're screaming about.
We got no complaints from the big box stores. They paid their bill, even though it went up tremendously.
Okay.
The big issue is from your homeowners. They're the ones that don't want to see huge increases. They're the ones that'll show up here at your board meetings,
mm-hmm,
and lodge their complaints en masse. So what we're trying to do is coordinate the system to represent a one-inch line that goes into a house, to have that be the base, and then everything else is a multiplier over that.
I get that. I'm just...
You're wondering how those big box stores are going to compensate for the extra expenses.
I don't want to hurt the workers.
John, one concern I'd have is when you talk about the sewer being, the flow being regulated by the water use. They got that in town. And so you go out and wash a car or mow or water your lawn and stuff, because unless you're going to pay for another meter, you pay for the sewer.
And it gets
awful expensive.
Actually, we were talking about that, and we're looking at making, there are ways to adjust for if you have like a
seasonal.
Yep, a seasonal usage, such as watering your lawn. We can take a look at what the average is over the winter and the average is over the summer, make a differential on that. So there are ways to accommodate for that difference. It's not as perfect as like metering it, but we can do that, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And there are communities that have that require your irrigation to be metered. And then when the irrigation system is turned off, that is not a part of your sewer. Mm. So what the ordinance right now is not set up to require second services for irrigation. So everybody's irrigation runs through their domestic service line. So that's something that we'll have to take into consideration in identifying what rates to charge. It would not be something that would be forced on the township. The township will have a right to review everything and then make decisions based on actual numbers, actual rates. And we'll be able to say what the actual impact is to certain customers, because we will take any new rates and apply it to the usage that they had before and stuff like that. So you'll be able to see per customer what increases are per month, what that equates to per year and stuff like that.
I guess the one other thing I'd ask too, and I'm not sure how they do it, but these apartment complexes, condos, whatever we're talking about, I don't know if they're all metered individually or if they're a master meter. I know that.
Yes.
Okay. The thing is, the ones that are metered individually, are they a smaller meter than a single resident would have?
No, they would be a larger meter.
So
in an apartment building that has 24 units, we run a 2-inch line in, they get a 2-inch meter.
Okay.
The 24 unit that each apartment is, yeah, they have a 5/8 meter in every apartment. They still have the 2-inch line that goes in, but it's...
Yeah, but they got a 5/8 meter. Is that what residential single family has?
Correct.
Okay.
It's a 5/8 by 3/4. Everybody calls it a 3/4, but it's a 5/8 inch meter.
Okay.
So we have 5/8, 3/4. We have 3/4, 1 inch, 1.5, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8. So there are some customers that have very large meters. So that's going to be a tremendous cost.
So really what we're looking for then on this utility financial solutions on page 204 is basically with the township looking at the financial projections and the cost of service, or solely the financial projection. Based on the information that I've learned and gone over with John, and I believe that you're recommending, correct, John, is the cost of service.
Correct.
Is undergoing that. We do have the funds to conduct those analysis. It's just under $14,000 each, $13,670 for water, and then the same amount for sewer. We have those funds available in our 590 and 595. So my recommendation, along with John's, is to move forward on the UFS study with the financial projection and the cost of service analysis.
I would make the motion that we, I didn't go back up there, approve the USF.
UFS, yep.
You did I do it wrong?
It's right here.
Yeah, I've got that.
Okay.
And their proposal and do the projected cost, is it cost of goods sold?
Cost of service.
Cost of service, sorry.
Okay, there's a motion made regarding the issue. Is there support? Okay, I will support that. Is there further discussion?
Yeah. I'm concerned about the fact that they gave us a price, but then on the bottom it says on-site visits are billed at out-of-scope pricing, travel time discounts. So what they gave you as a price, or us as a price, they already are saying that we're going to go over that and all these things are out of scope. So I would feel comfortable if there's a not-to-exceed cost.
Sure, we can do that. So if you look at, these are just under $28,000 together. I think we're sitting at, do another calculator out, or 13,670 twice. And I think if we add, John, knowing you've worked with UFS before and other firms just like them, if you could maybe estimate, in addition to that 13,670 times two, what you would think would be a good not to exceed number based on that. And I agree, that would be a good thing to have in the motion.
I would recommend a budget of 5,000 for meetings.
Okay. Total, so 2,500 per.
Yeah, total, because they're gonna we'll talk both at the same time.
Okay.
Some of the meetings that they're talking about are here at the township for presentation.
Okay.
Any other meetings I've talked with Dawn already? She's from Leland, so we can go out there as opposed to her coming out here.
Uh huh.
It's one meeting for the BPW. And one meeting at least for the township. So I would include a third, maybe. 5,000, I think, should cover the meetings.
Okay. So that's, we're looking at about $33,000 between both of the funds.
Mm-hmm. 32,340.
Yeah, just under 33.
Yeah. So would you?
I'll amend my motion to include a not to exceed of 33,000.
Okay. And did I support that? I supported
yes,
that.
Yes, you supported it.
I would also agree to that amendment as well. Any additional questions or comments? Okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed by no? Okay. Motion passes unanimously. John, thank you for your work on this. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We will keep you informed as we move forward. This is definitely, I think, an approach we need to go forward on. So,
yeah, there was a schedule in the first proposal.
Yep.
And I believe that was for all the townships. I'm hoping that we expedite East Bay much quicker than what she had in here.
Yep. Well, we've gotten her the 3 years of financial data.
Yep.
So far, so we'll see what else they need coming up. But I was glad to see that tight schedule, because I know like developers have been watching this too, mm-hmm. and they're like, and how long is this going to take? And so it was nice to see that tight schedule on there of the 12 weeks. I'm sure it might get changed by a little bit, but seems like they're certainly on task. So,
yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do we need to do something about our 2020 rates?
Thank you. I was just. Go back and look at the agenda. So, appreciate that, Tracy. On the 2020 rates, real
guys.
Quick, John, I'm going to keep you one more second. The 2020 rates, which, of course, we need to get to Diane for the water and sewer, I guess my recommendation to the board is that we just hold steady on our water and sewer rates while all of this is being done. I think it's pointless to change them. When we're looking at this analysis, would that be?
Yep, we would recommend hold off on that, and then in lieu of any increase, we would just recommend you implement the recommended rates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So I'll go ahead and make the motion that we maintain the current rates for 2019 for 2020, pending the results from the UFS analysis.
Support.
Okay. Motion is made by Friend and supported by Walters. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 And opposed by no. Okay. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. We are down to scheduling joint meetings with the Planning Commission and the Parks Commission. the Planning Commission had a suggestion of meeting just prior to their March 17th meeting at 5:30 p.m.
We did.
That's what I heard.
Okay.
Okay.
Bad news to me.
All right. Well, maybe if they didn't have the suggestion, maybe it was staff's suggestion. But that sounds workable. So instead of having them meet on a completely separate additional night, we'll just meet an hour before and have a second meeting. Would that work for pretty much everyone's schedule?
I'm sorry, what date was it?
March 17th. Isn't that St. Patrick's Day?
Mm-hmm. Yes. No pub crawling for all of you.
That means
we're going to have green beer, too?
Maybe after. Afterwards. All right. Yeah. Is that fine with everyone to go ahead and set that? All right. We'll do that.
So it's at 5:30?
5:30. Yep. And then with the Parks Commission, my suggestion would be possibly meeting as well just after their meeting. They meet at 5:30, I think. Or are they at 6 o'clock?
They're at 6 o'clock.
They're at 6 o'clock. So
planning is at 5:30.
5:30.
Oh, really?
Because their meeting starts at 6:30.
We'll meet at 5:30.
So they won't have a site review that meeting.
Or they'll do it on another day.
Yeah, they'll have to do something else.
Yeah.
And the Park Commission meeting, is that on the 16th?
That is on February 18th.
Oh, you're looking at February?
Yep.
Or March?
February. And one of the reasons is we are looking at moving a DNR Trust Fund grant forward. And so I'd like to get that done in February as opposed to March when the application's due April 1st.
And their meeting starts at 6, so we would start at 5?
I think we could do that, or they could
or
potentially...
Or we're doing it after.
Why don't we do it after, and we could start at 6:30.
Okay, when have you got the Park Commission?
The Park Commission, February 18th, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. And starting at?
6:30 for the joint meeting.
Because they start at 7?
They start at 6.
They're going to have a very short meeting.
I see.
I think they can handle it. I think they can be efficient.
I have no doubt.
So we're doing it at 6:30.
Okay. We will go with that and see how that works. Does anyone know that they can't make either of those for sure? Go ahead.
Park Commission.
Park Commission. Okay. Any others? Okay. And we can you get those dates to Andrea? Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. All right. Next on the agenda, we have the street... Memory Lane, street naming of Memory Lane. Mindy, did you have a question on that?
There's a cul-de-sac. If I could find myself.
Yeah, why didn't they name the cul-de-sac?
Why didn't they name the cul-de-sac?
I had the very same question. And didn't get an answer to that other than they weren't looking to name it yet at that point. I'm like, why didn't they just name them all at the same time? What page in the packet is that?
I'm looking at the new packet.
Oh, that's right. That's why I didn't have the new packet. But yeah, same thing. I wondered as well.
I don't have a problem with it called Memory Lane, but I don't understand why we didn't do the cul-de-sac at the same time.
Me too.
Well, it will create an issue with the numbering and for elections. I mean, they're going to have a name by the time they start the development of that cul-de-sac.
So can we send it back to them and say, what's the name of the cul-de-sac?
I think we probably just want to... Sometimes they are waiting for that name to get a driveway permit, and so I think we should probably just name it and then encourage them to...
Name the cul-de-sac.
Name the cul-de-sac.
Sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I wouldn't want to delay it, and then you're delayed a month, and they're waiting to go get a permit. And we can, or we could choose the second name for them.
Forgetful cul-de-sac.
Forgetful. Yeah. So is there a motion?
I would make a motion that we approve the proposed road name as presented.
I'll support that.
Okay, a motion made by Bartlett and supported by Walters. Any further discussion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by no. Okay, motion passes unanimously. Let's see. You guys were keeping me on track with this agenda. I don't think we've missed anything, have we?
Mm.
Public comment. If there's any public who would like to make public comment, please feel free to come to the podium. Introduce yourself. How are you today?
Good evening. Bruce Moore, 3363 Summerleaf Drive.
with respect to Commissioner LaPointe's comments on the airport commission, the schedule for that is for the negotiation of all of the governing documents to occur in between March and May of this year. There's going to be a lot of stuff competing for attention during that period. I think that because East Bay Township, Traverse City, and Garfield Township are adjacent to the airport and underneath or within the noise contours for the airport, I think that it would be worthwhile for the township to advocate for some kind of representation on the board going forward with whether it's a commission or an authority. That's actually not the big decision. The big decision are the actual governing documents, and I think that East Bay Township should advocate for some type of representation on that board. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. If there are no objections, then we stand adjourned. Everybody have a good evening. Be careful going home. Thanks.